Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10. The pass is tight end.
And Raja Bell.
Bell has got 22 to Raja.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? It is Friday. Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Raja Bell. Our girl Hannah has the day off. She's got a little wedding to do, little bridesmaids duties.
What?
Our boy Debo is a trooper, man. You want to talk about a diehard Eagles fan. Our boy went up to Philly to watch with his family. We talked about the raw emotion of him crying, tearing up with his family.
Phenomenal videos.
Outstanding. The joy. And if it wasn't enough to be there when they won the Super Bowl, you went to the parade.
I was there.
Logistically.
I got emotional.
You did. You were crying again.
A little bit. I don't think there's any video.
You confiscated everybody's phones on that one. But just logistically, just give everybody an idea of how this went down.
So flew back to Philadelphia last weekend to watch the game.
Yep.
Flew back to Florida Monday night. Flew back to Atlantic City on Wednesday night and then experienced the parade yesterday. Drove to Baltimore, got on a plane back to Florida. I'm here this morning.
Dedicated
to this thing. He's on about 2 hours of sleep.
Hey, what was AC like? I love Atlantic City. What was AC like? Was AC
airport?
Just one extension of, like, did you party in AC at all?
No,
or did you just,
no.
You just flew into the airport?
I got
there
at
midnight.
He was working the cheapest flight schedules there. Maybe in 5-star Q&A, we're going to ask you some highlights of the parade yesterday. We'll do that today. It's one of our favorite segments. We'll do a little bit on the Duke-UNC rivalry. Jimmy Garoppolo getting paid was insane. The Winter Olympics, all this stuff we're going to get to. But the story of the day yesterday, and I had a cold take the other day this week because I said, nothing probably will top the Blake Griffin trade.
Yep.
And man, yep. I could not have been more wrong because all of a sudden, Adrian Wojnarowski starts just dropping Woj bombs as he's known to do. And you talk about just blowing up rosters. There's a whole new look NBA, and specifically with the Cavs. And we talked a lot about the Cavs' struggles. I actually admire them for doing something because I thought it was this draft. I thought it was this bad. I thought they were in trouble. You would put them on a 2, right? A 2 out of on a scale of 1 to 10 confidence how much they could win the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm actually glad they said, you know what? This isn't working. Let's blow it up and try to make a new run with some young guys. So basically, to wrap things up, if you weren't paying attention, the Lakers get Isaiah Thomas, Channing Frye, and Cleveland's first-round pick. The Cavs get Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr., so a little bit younger, and guys that LeBron will be able to mold.
Absolutely.
And by the way, D-Wade out, Jay Crowder out. Like, I didn't even
know. Let's go deal by deal, because that's kind of the way it went down.
Right.
Like, I was at my son's he had something at his school yesterday for their fifth grade class, and my wife was like, hey, are you cool to hang around? It's like, sure, I'm good. And I look at my phone 2 minutes later, and the proverbial stuff hits the fan, and I'm like, I got to go. I got to get to the office. We got to cover this. So the first trade, I think that spoke a lot to what we had kind of figured was happening there. Isaiah Thomas, you get to a new team. You're not producing. Don't be the loudest mouth in the room. Like, I know that you're outspoken, and wherever you've been in the past, like, that's been respected and you've been lauded for it, but you've got to have a little feel. Team's struggling. People are down. Don't be throwing shade at everybody else, not taking responsibility. I thought the comment about, hey, they're a bottom five defense before I got here. Like, how can that? People aren't good. That's not going to be taken well in the locker room. And so, you know, I think it spoke to how bad it actually was and how much people were off of IT4 there, not just management, but players as well. So that's addition by subtraction, in my opinion. Just if you remove him from that and keep the same roster, I think they wind up better off. But the fact that you were able to get Jordan Clarkson, who's a good young player, didn't fit with the core going forward and with the Lakers, a little older than the rest of those guys, maybe a little too good with the ball, taking a little bit of shine off Lonzo and Kyle Kuzma and their ability to grow. But he fits what you want to do coming off the bench in Cleveland. Another guy who can kind of make plays, could shoot, could play off the ball because he's done both in his career. He had to play with Kobe, so he knows how to fit in that regard. And I think Larry Nance is a steal in the draft. Larry Nance Jr., really good, high-energy young player, rim run, finish on the lob. Defensively, he's very versatile, high basketball IQ. So that's a win for me. Addition by subtraction alone would have been a win,
mm-hmm.
but being able to extract those two from the deal, even better. Next deal.
Hold on. I want to do something just to recap all these pieces of this trade, because I think Debo actually has a pretty good scale of how to judge these.
Yeah.
So does it matter a lot? Does it matter a little or not at all?
Matters a lot.
This first piece of
the puzzle. That first piece of the puzzle matters a lot.
So you don't think they gave up on IT too soon?
No.
Me neither.
No.
Like, I thought it was a bad fit. And I think it's a good move. Like, sometimes you date a girl and she might be super hot, but it's not working, but you might stay on.
No
and then
chemistry.
You end up wasting your time, like valuable time. And LeBron James' time right now is valuable.
It's very valuable because there's not, you know, that window is closing and you know, real talk, that window in Cleveland specifically is closing quick.
Yeah.
It could be damn near almost shut. And so, look, you could debate on whether or not IT four rounds into shape as a player this year as he continues to rehab and he gets his step back and his explosiveness. But that's not changing the personalities in the locker room,
yep.
the fit chemistry-wise. It's not going to change any of that. So I don't think they gave up too soon. That was a mess.
All right, next piece of this trade that went down. Cavs get Rodney Hood, George Hill. The Jazz get Derrick Rose, Jay Crowder. Kings get Joe Johnson, Amon Shumpert, and a 2020 second round pick.
You just got George Hill, who's a starting caliber point guard. He was defensively hasn't been great this year, but last year was probably a top five defensive guard in the league. Long, 6'5", rangy, very, very good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. Any point guard who's ever been very successful playing with LeBron was a guy who could get you into offense, get out of the way, spot up and shoot, and defend. He checks all the boxes. You got him for nothing.
Matters a lot. So that's two.
That's two.
For the Cavs.
And look what your point guard position was giving you. It was you had Derrick Rose,
mm-hmm.
who probably, I mean, it's debatable whether he should even be in the NBA right now. I mean, by his own actions, he just takes leaves of absence to check on whether or not his heart's still in it. Like,
right.
That dude, just go somewhere. That's right. Enough. Isaiah was giving you – Isaiah was one of the worst I don't remember what the stat was, but – statistically, defensively, and offensively, he was one of the worst producers in the NBA right now.
Yeah.
Like his teams were substantially worse with him on the court, both offensively and defensively. So you got a starting level PG who's played in some big games for some really good teams with some great players, playoff proven for nothing. You were getting nothing out of that position. Then you bring in Rodney Hood, who I'm a big fan of. I expected this year to take a step, and I think most people in Utah did too, into that Gordon Hayward role a little bit more. I mean, when Gordon was there, Rodney Hood was playing fantastic. And his inability to really take that step speaks to me. It says that, you know, he's not a number one, but he's a really, really, really good number two, number three type of player.
Mm-hmm.
And this is perfect for the role he gets to come in and play with Cleveland. He's not a number one. You don't want any more guys. Isaiah Thomas, number one. D. Wade, number one. Derrick Rose, number one. All of these guys, you put them all in a locker room with LeBron, number one.
Yeah.
Kevin
it's
Love,
a lot
number
of
one.
Alpha
it's a
dog.
Lot of alphas.
Yeah.
You need dudes who know how to be subordinates.
Yeah.
They know how to come in, be good soldiers, play their role, do their job. And that's what you're getting now. And a really, really good one in Rodney Hood, who again, 6'7", is he? 6'7", 6'8"?
Yeah, averaging 17 points a game and 39% from three.
Dude, long, rangy, jump shooter, athletic. You've checked a lot of boxes. Again, you got him for nothing. Amon Shumpert. I love Shump.
Right.
Great rapper. Right?
Yeah.
Hasn't played great, though, in Cleveland. And Jay Crowder clearly wasn't a great fit. You know, he wasn't able to live up to the hype that or the form that he had played with in Boston. So you walk away with those two pieces for nothing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, that's a win.
I'm not a huge analytics guy, but I think it was defensive player efficiency rating. Do they do that? That's a specific stat that IT was last in the league, or second to last. There was
incredibly bad.
Yeah, incredibly bad on that one. All right, so that one matters a lot. So we got two matters a lot for the Cavs. All right, what about the Heat getting D Wade? The Cavs get a second round pick. Matters a lot, matters a little, or doesn't matter at all?
Matters a little.
It does.
Matters a little.
For who?
It doesn't matter a lot.
For who?
It matters a little.
The Heat? Like, is it a good pickup to get him back?
Yeah, it's good for the Heat.
Yeah,
the Heat,
infuses some energy into the fan base. Because it's Wade County.
Yep.
There was a big, you know, even local news stations were sending cameras out to get him coming off the plane when he gets back in Miami.
Yeah, that was fun watching he and Gabby get off at Opa-locka Airport.
Yeah.
They need, it's star town. NBA is a star league. And they don't have one in Miami right now. Like, Goran Dragic is a great player. They've got some good young pieces. But none of them are really going to ever get you over the hump. And D-Wade's not going to at this point. But it brings some life back to the city and some excitement back to the season, which is actually, like, they've struggled lately. But I think overall they're overachieving. And so,
yeah. I mean, they're still making the playoffs.
Right. He's got some tread left on the tire. Like, I think you can plug him in and he'll actually have an impact for this team. What's going to be interesting for me is to see a lot of these are D-Wade's young boys. Like, they're the ones that D-Wade kind of raised. They cut their teeth. He was their vet.
Yeah.
So when most of them came into the league, they had to figure out how to play with D-Wade.
Yeah.
Now I think it's on D-Wade's shoulders to figure out how to come back and fit in and play with them. And he's got some experience in Cleveland now, but that's not always the easiest thing.
Was this the most? Because this was the most surprising to me, this piece of it, because I don't know. I just thought D Wade and his boy, like LeBron, they were best friends. I thought they wanted to make run at a title together.
Well, that's not happening.
No, clearly, clearly it's not. Right. But that's why I was surprised. But I also think LeBron, who is pulling a lot of these strings, like it or not, I think he is. I think he orchestrated, hey, we can get – like, that's the only place I think they would have moved D-Wade. Yeah. I don't think they would have sent him to any one of these other teams.
I don't either.
Because of LeBron's relationship with D-Wade, he wasn't going to screw him over and send him anywhere else but Miami.
I have no confirmation on this whatsoever. I want to be clear on that. I've not talked to Kobe Altman in months. So this is just me speculating, watching the trades go down. That one, I believe, he was informed of and consulted with. Like, because that's his friend – he came there to play with LeBron, and I believe the conversation was to the tune of, like, look, we got to play Chetty Osman. He's been playing great. We've got these young pieces now. We're trying to get younger, more athletic. You know, D-Wade's not going to get a whole lot of minutes here. You know, what would you think about the Miami thing for him? And
do you think they also consulted D-Wade?
I believe so, yeah. I do. I think they wanted to do right. If I'm reading between the lines, they wanted to do right by D-Wade with this trade. I don't believe, however, that LeBron orchestrated the rest of these deals. I don't think he played any real significant part in the Isaiah deal, the Rodney Hood deal, or the
you don't think so at all?
No, I think they may have, like, run it by him once the deal was kind of in hand and they figured out all the moving pieces and said, hey, LeBron, look, how would you feel about Derek Hood?
Right.
And then LeBron, I mean, but any good GM with the best player on the planet or the best player on their team, they probably do that. I mean, I sat in a meeting with Robert Sarver, Mike D'Antoni, and Steve Nash at the end of one of our seasons, and they asked, you know, I wasn't even one of the best players on the team, but they ran a significant deal by the two of us to see if it was something that we thought could work. And point being, you generally do that. That's not anything that's just unique to LeBron. So I think he had, like, yeah, dude, I like Rodney Hood, or yeah, George Hill's a good player. Like, I think that could work here, but I don't think he was the one pulling the strings on those.
It's big for Kobe Altman to come out, like, and make this type of deal.
Good for you, Kobe.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a big deal. All right, so real quick before we get to LeBron's future, this season, where's your confidence level now? Like, is this Cavs team significantly better? Yeah. Are you putting them back in the finals?
Yep.
You are.
I am. Now, I mean, obviously, there are a lot of hurdles to clear in terms of chemistry and
but they have
fit.
That's the good thing about now, they have time.
How much does it take, though, to integrate five new pieces into your rotation?
It takes time, but here's the deal. First of all, you got the best player on the planet.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yep.
Right? Secondly, you didn't bring in a bunch of alphas that have to reinvent themselves as players. Like, learn how to play off the ball. Learn how to share the ball. You've got a bunch of guys who will naturally fit into what they want to do. Their roles are already defined in the league, and they can just plug them into those roles kind of with Cleveland. Don't get me wrong, there's still a lot of chemistry and learning how to play off of each other and so on and so forth that has to take place, but it'll be a lot easier with the type of pieces you brought in. The one interesting piece is that Kevin Love comes back so late in the season.
Yeah.
Because without Kevin Love, like, and I've said my piece about Kevin and how his relationships were in Cleveland. He's an amazing player.
Yeah.
And you're going to need him to be playing at an amazing level to do what you want to do in Cleveland. And that reintegrating him that late into a chemistry that's very, very new and hopefully clicking at that point is going to throw just one more wrinkle in it. But I do think because of the pieces, because of their status as role guys anyway, I think that it can work. And I believe that your major flaw was defensively. Now, you haven't cleaned up your rim presence. But, man, your ability to defend on the perimeter and your ability to be athletic and switch everything and keep stuff in front of you has gotten better.
All right. So what does this mean moving forward for LeBron James? Because there's a lot of speculation that the Lakers are doing this to create some space, some cap space, so they can sign two max deals so they can bring LeBron and somebody else. And Paul George was playing in L.A. last night, and his family's sitting next to superstars. Like, what does this mean for them?
Well, it ain't no speculation. They cleared the cap space to do what they need to do.
So you think – likelihood that LeBron goes to L.A.?
I don't know. I think it depends on what this looks like coming down the stretch.
Yeah.
If this team and all these pieces that I think – will help reinvigorate like the energy in the building. Will help support their defensive philosophy. If all of that comes to fruition, I think you could see. Plus, they're going to have a Brooklyn's pick. I think LeBron and Cleveland's got to be praying for Brooklyn. Like the guys, just give it up. Like let us. That pick is getting worse and worse the more Brooklyn plays. But good for you, Brooklyn. If they make it to the finals and he's got a top six pick coming. Like I don't. He loves Cleveland, man. Like Cleveland's his home, you know.
But he wants to win. He wants to make one more run at a championship.
Well, you ain't doing that in LA any easier than you're doing it in Cleveland at this point.
Even if you got Paul George to join him.
I mean, but Paul George is fantastic, but Kevin Love is really, really good.
Yeah, but I don't think Kevin Love has that killer instinct. That's what bothers me about him. I think he's mentally fragile.
Well, Paul George has never won a thing.
That's true. That's
ever.
A good point.
I mean, and I love Paul George. I think he's one of my favorite players to watch in the game. But if you're telling me, he's not a killer, yeah, I get it. Like, Paul George down the stretch, I alluded to it, on one of our episodes. His closing numbers, in terms of knocking down that final shot, are bad.
Yeah.
And that's not to take anything away from him. But I guess what I'm saying is it's all going to depend on what this looks like down the stretch. Obviously, the Lakers with Lonzo, Kuzma, Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram. If you plug in LeBron and Paul George, I mean, you're cooking with something. But let me flip it real quick. And forgive me as I get long-winded into basketball.
I like it.
I love basketball season, baby.
I like it.
If you're the Lakers, how much do you think LeBron has left in the tank?
Right.
And I don't.
To be the leader, to be the guy that puts your team on your back.
Yeah, well, what you can do, you sign him. I don't know, was it 4 or 5 year deal? Could they sign him to?
Is it a
4 year deal? You're gonna max him out at 4 years. I mean, you're just coming off of a deal like that with Kobe. They took him. He was too long in the tooth. LeBron winds up at what, 37 at that point.
Man,
he's shown no signs.
He's 33. His game, his style of play too, I think, is more suited to play longer because he can be more a facilitator. Like one of the things he's been knocked for, I think could actually help him extend his career. But it's still a lot of wear and tear.
I agree,
on
and
that
he's a big old boy, but
and he's never had any significant issues as far as injury. He's never had those type of deals that he's had. When was the last time you've had him at a...
His absence was kind of when he took that hiatus to Miami.
Which wasn't even an injury.
It's a stupid question because, of course, if you're the Lakers, you're going to buy LeBron for 4 years. You're going to do that.
Even if you only got two or three out, you'd still take it.
Yes, you're going to buy it. It's a ridiculous question. But I guess if I'm LeBron, I got to go with what I know. If I'm talking about chasing championships, and I know what my odometer's ticking at. I know how much I got left in the tank. I can feel that every morning. It's purely going to come down to, where I think I'm closer to the championship. And if that's Cleveland, then he'll be in Cleveland. And if that's the Lakers, he'll be with L.A.
This isn't – I'm not trying to be a homer here, but the best situation, a lot of people have said, with the young pieces,
stop
Philadelphia.
It. Stop. Just stop, bro. You guys are riding Super Bowl. Stop. Just
they're
stop.
Closer than the Lakers, right?
No. I hear you. So I hear you. Yeah, you got it.
It's not going to happen, but just from a roster standpoint.
You're right. I mean, you're talking about you've got a great big Joel Embiid. You got Ben Simmons. Ben and LeBron would be interesting because Ben doesn't shoot the ball.
You know what else you got going for? You're in the Eastern Conference.
You're in the Eastern Conference.
maybe Devo's on to something.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
but you got to stop, bro. The Philly is just out of control right now.
Vegas agrees with you on the Cavs. So the other day we had talked about the Celtics creeping up there where they were becoming the favorite.
Yeah,
it's back up where the Cavs are a significant favorite. Celtics second, Raptors in third at plus 350 to make the NBA Finals. All right, so it should make for a fun rest of the NBA season, no doubt. College basketball last night, UNC overtakes Duke. As far as college basketball goes, I don't watch a ton, but I'll watch the better games, the rivalry games, and this one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports.
Yeah,
this is one. I've been to Chapel Hill for a game, and I've been to Cameron Indoor for a game. I think this is one of the college basketball games that you have to tune in throughout the season.
Yeah. You're talking Duke, North Carolina. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than that. And I don't really care what they're ranked, even when they're not.
Right. But they were both top 25 last night.
Right.
Playing to the wire again. It used to be, I think, a little bit better. I think it does diminish somewhat the fact that you have so many one and duns playing in this one because they're recruiting to one and duns now.
Yep.
But they do have some guys like Grayson Allen who's been around for a while now. So you have a villain of college basketball who's playing in this one. But I do miss the fact when you had third and fourth year guys who had been back and forth and really developed nastiness and hatred for one another because they had banged so many different times in rivalry.
I used to love watching those UNC games. Yes, you knew they were brand names, like they were household names on both teams, and you got to watch them thug it out. Those were great games. There was a level of in today's landscape. It happens with my fifth grade teams. Like our biggest rivals, like. I hate their coaches. Their coaches hate me. But all of our kids, all of our kids are like buddy-buddy.
I hate that.
You know what I mean?
Don't you hate that?
Well, yeah. And so that's what these games become now because these top 25 kids have all been buddies since they were like 14, 13 years old. And so there's no level of like animosity and just genuine hate in the game. They're just all showcasing their talents for the NBA and like we'll just roll it out there and, you know, we'll put on a show. But there's no real hate. The fans still have hate. We want hate.
Right.
Grayson Allen, I want to touch on him because I feel bad. He's lost a lot. He's lost a lot. That stock has dropped. I mean, it's kind of like it's like where we are in the like stock market right now. Like we're down.
Right.
We're down.
And he was at one time after that freshman year. Everybody was raving about him. Could have been a
lottery
top
pick.
Yeah.
You strike while the iron's hot.
But see, I hate that.
No, I know, but you do. Like, look, if by chance any prospect is listening to this damn podcast,
yeah.
If you have any sort of stock or any inclination that someone is high on you, leave.
I totally agree with you, but leave. I hate that we have to – it's become to – because Sam Darnold was in the very same situation, the quarterback for USC. From a business standpoint, and you have to approach yourself as a corporation. You are a commodity that is worth a ton of money.
Yep.
You have to, quote, sell at the right time, and you have to strike the iron while it's hot. I think – with Sam Darnold, I think he made the right decision. Even though for him, I feel like he's going to miss out on a fun time, a great time.
Yeah.
But you almost have to grow up fast. You have to grow up in a hurry to capitalize on the moment at hand. And I agree with you. That's one thing, Grayson Allen. Now, here's what I will say.
Huh.
If Duke can get hot and make a run in the tournament, he can get that stock right back up. Because I think the NBA and every scout in every league, they get very short-sighted and they go with what they just saw. So he could have another run through the tournament like he had his freshman year, and all of a sudden everybody's saying, oh, let's give Grayson Allen a chance.
If he did that, he certainly would have a chance to redeem
on some mock draft sites. He still has a first-round pick around 25, 26, but definitely not the lottery-type money.
Look, he would have been – look, I watched it happen with Rakeem Christmas. Rakeem Christmas, I sat in draft rooms, and we wound up picking him in the second round. And some of the knock on him was, although his numbers were great, he was now a 21-year-old doing it against 17-year-olds. So he stayed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that he had the opportunity to come out early. But the point was his numbers were diminished. Like, and we were killing him in the draft room because they were saying he was a grown man playing against kids. So, like, literally, you get penalized by scouts and GMs the longer you stay because your numbers are being produced against lesser opponents, and so they punish you for that, which is so stupid.
Right, but over analysis.
Right, it's the way it goes. Can I segue back to one thing real quick?
Yeah.
I didn't touch on this. How much money did Isaiah Thomas lose from the end of last season in Boston to right now? Like, could a stock be any worse? Like. What do you call it? Devalued, depreciated? Could it be any worse right now?
No, it's a crash.
What do you think type of deal?
Like, dude, I feel awful for him.
Because there was a lot of not haters, doubters of whether he was a max deal guy anyway. He probably would have gotten it, right, after last season.
I don't know him. I like how hard he plays. I love that he's a little dude that goes out there and does what he does. I love the way he wears that on his shoulder. Like, I respect all of that. I feel awful for that dude. And it's not his fault. It wasn't his fault.
Right.
It wasn't his fault. He went to a locker room that was already probably funky. He just wound up being a bad fit for it. And I'm telling you, he's lost.
Yeah.
I mean, tens of. He might have lost $50 million.
It could have been up to $200 million if he stayed with the Celtics and signed an extension.
He's lost $50 million easy.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, it's a damn shame.
I think he'll still be okay financially in the big picture.
Yeah.
You know, which makes you feel a little bit. Oh, it
does
suck. I totally agree with you. All right, Debo, What's happening, man? What do we got? What kind of news out there?
Shout out Hannah.
Yeah, shout out Hannah's
Hannah,
out here.
Wagwan.
But we're going to get to what's happening now with our boy Debo.
So we talked about UNC topping Duke. Another upset last night in college hoops with UCLA topping number 13 Arizona, 82-74. Aaron Holiday paced the Bruins with 17 points, while DeAndre Ayton held to 16 points on 7 of 19 shooting for the Wildcats. Did add 12 rebounds. But Raja, do you believe that Ayton, and not a guy like Marvin Bagley, could be the number one pick in June's draft? Ayton projected number one right now.
Yeah, I absolutely do. I don't know that he will be, because at the end of the day, it comes down to the taste of whoever's picking at number one and which one of them they like better, measurables and intangibles and all of the bulls, right? But he, you rarely get that size, speed, athletic combination like him and Bagley. He's even bigger than Bagley, isn't he? Like he's a bigger person, bigger body, bigger shoulders. So yeah, very easily could be number one.
All right, so tally another in the tech column for Draymond Green. Draymond picked up his league-leading 14th technical foul in the second quarter Thursday night in a win against the Mavericks. The three-time All-Star voiced his frustration, again, venting against the call and against the refs. Ho-hum at this point?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys where you know what you're getting. He's going to be vocal. He plays with his emotions, which makes him great. But it also comes with some baggage. You just kind of have to deal with it. You kind of know what to expect.
It is what it is, baby.
You want him, I don't think you want him to shut that down. Like, he, I mean, at some point we start talking about the suspension if you get so many texts. But ultimately, you want him to – he thrives off this type of emotion.
You know, Mike D'Antoni used to say, like, when he was talking about me, like, he is who he is. Like,
yeah.
It's what makes him who he is. And right. You kind of live with some of the –
yeah.
It's the way it goes.
I don't know if the LeBron curse affected Isaiah Thomas, but the team LeBron curse is at least reaping benefits for some All-Star replacements. The latest, it's Hornets guard Kemba Walker making his second All-Star appearance now, replacing the injured Kristaps Porzingis. Four original players from Team LeBron have been injured since the teams were selected.
Boy, that's got to suck. If I'm on Team LeBron, I'm like,
being careful.
I'm shutting it down through the All-Star break right now.
No
doubt. Yeah, Kemba, hey, look. Kemba's. I was surprised that he didn't move yesterday. I thought he was somebody that could possibly be moving. But yeah, that I love watching Kemba play. He's one of those guys that when I have my kids like YouTube a player and just watch some of their highlights, Kemba's the top five in our rotation.
All right, the last one. Switching from basketball to football, Jimmy G is getting paid.
Ooh,
Thursday,
wait.
The 49ers extending the 26-year-old quarterback and in the process making Garoppolo the NFL's highest paid player. The reported numbers, 5 years, $137.5 million, including $90 million guaranteed in the first 3 years.
Ooh-ay.
If true, those numbers slightly top Matt Stafford. Garoppolo led the previously 1-10 Niners to a 5-0 finish in their final five games.
So this, if this wasn't on the trade deadline with all those crazy news, like this is blockbuster news.
Right.
And I feel... this is crazy. This is craziness. But at the same time, because I don't think there's anywhere big enough of a body of work after starting only 7 games. 5-0, I get it. He was impressive in those games. But you've got two issues that I think remain very much big, two questions, huge question marks. One is the injury issue, because even the first stint when he played in two starts with the New England, he got hurt. So you never had no idea he's going to deal with an entire 16-game slate of getting pounded every single week. The second, more important, bigger question is 7 games is no way representative of how a guy is going to play throughout his career. It's
right.
A good indication, and you should be happy and excited about moving forward. But what happens when the expectations change on you? Now all of a sudden you're the highest paid player in the league. It's a different stress. So I always like to see a quarterback, how does he do an after adversity? How is he going to play after he throws 3 picks? And he's gotten beat up from an offensive line that might struggle in one game, because it happens to everybody. It happens to Brady. It happens to Peyton Manning. It happens to Brett Favre. You are going to have a game where you get killed.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the media is going to start killing you. The fans will start booing. How do you react to that? We don't know that, because he's had – everything's been peachy. Everything's been great for Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy G, GQ. He looks great. But how do you respond to that type of adversity? And without knowing the answer to that question – it terrifies me that they backed up the truck for him and gave him this type of deal.
I mean, it's insane. They have to know something that they know, right? I'm just going to go with these guys are at the highest level of this. If they're going to give him that bag of money, they know. So I'm going to let's say they know. Here's what I know. I wish when I played, like my first,
yeah.
I had to prove that I could play for about 6-7 years before right. somebody said, right. "Hey, man, you more interested in like a in a mid-level contract? Would right. that make you happy?" I'm like, "Yes, please, please give it to me." I wish that I could have done what he did, just be like Allen Iverson's backup and Michael Finley's backup and Nick Van Exel's backup, and right. somebody said, "Hey, you're pretty good. Take $100 million." So good for you, Jimmy G. I don't hate. I'm not hating, but they must know something, because I agree with you. Sample size not nearly big enough. Not nearly enough adversity in his life to know how he will respond to it. And so, you know, look, when
it's
you're
a whole different standpoint, it's a whole different life. Bro, it's a whole different perspective. It's a whole different pressure. And you never know how a guy's going to respond until he's agreed. Under that scrutiny and has to handle that pressure. So when John Lynch was hired, most people skewered it. They said, "Who is this guy? No experience coming from TV. Now a great player, but going from TV to the front office will not prepare him for this." Haven't played with John Lynch, know him pretty well, played with him in Denver. We were teammates for 2 years. I was one of the ones that said, "You know what? It may look crazy, but the guy's a winner. He's smart. He'll do what it takes. He's a hard worker. Yep. I think he'll succeed in this position." This one, I feel like I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, and you just said they know something.
Right.
They have had him in the locker room. They have seen the way he prepares, you know, on a daily basis. They do get to know him. And I do feel like John Lynch has a really good judge of character and how a guy does. But I'm still nervous for this one because
you.
Of that aspect. I would want to see a guy struggle, and how does he respond to that before I would back up the truck. And why not – and I get why not –
Two trucks.
Yeah. Why not give him a deal at, say, 20 a year, which is fair. Why not approach him and sell him and say, "Hey, we're going to pay you. We're going to take care of you, but we're not going to give you this crazy deal." Now, I get why, because he is a free agent, because he could have held him over a bailer and he could have gotten this money probably from somebody else. But, man, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of break.
And it's a lot of guaranteed money. So we'll see. It's very much an experiment. But watch what happens after two. If they start off 0-2, people are going to say it was a mistake.
Well, when you're John Lynch, I mean, what you've done is you've hitched you've hitched your future and your legacy in as a general manager to Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, if you're the guy who jumped out and gave Jimmy G all this
Absolutely.
Bread and he winds up being an average – to below average, because we don't know.
So now there are three pieces of this puzzle that will hitch together. Because Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch were pretty much a package deal, and they both got 6-year deals. So they were a package deal. Now you've got this long-term quarterback, which I guess in the big scope of things, it does look smart that you've got the three most important positions.
Locked up.
Your head coach, your general manager, and a quarterback. Now there's no question.
Right.
And you're saying, we are moving forward with this. So maybe it's good for them. Let's see how it works. I hope it does, because I'm rooting for them, because they're all good dudes and they're all good people. Winter Olympics buried in the news cycle, but it is the opening ceremonies tonight. They actually already started.
We are recording.
Yes. Did you know they actually had day -1? They actually called it that, because yesterday they started the Olympics because there was day -1. So they actually did start some events. Are you dialed in? Winter Olympics?
I am so not dialed in to the Winter Olympics.
Oh, come on. How can you not support your country?
No, I watched
anti-American.
I watched some speed skating the other night.
I did.
I watched some short track.
Yeah.
I watched some short track for like 10
minutes. No more Apollo Ono, though, right? He's out. He's a commentator,
that's
right?
That's his name. I was trying to figure out what his name was. I did a GQ shoot with him one time.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah, he was super cool, man. Apollo Ono. Was that
I tell you
Ono,
what,
yeah.
though. I've actually played some golf with Dan Jansen, was the long track guy who was younger when he won the gold medal. Those dudes in the Winter Olympics, so this is going to sound a little bit like a hater, but they get a lot of attention, and they only do something once every 4 years, and they don't really compete against that many people. How many people are out there really speed skating?
I'm not touching
that. 1,000?
Yeah.
To be the best in the world, how many people do you really have to beat?
You know what?
Like, it's actually genius on their part.
Speed skating community is going to be
well, when they,
are they
if they're listening to
they're
this,
rabid, like, fans.
Well, so I got in trouble from the curling community.
Yeah.
Because when I was working on my old radio show, we did a segment on if you had to train for an Olympic sport, which one do you think you could do? And I think I could be a curler if I gave a 2-year window and just dedicated myself to curling. I think I could be an Olympic curler.
Who's the talent in the curling?
I have no idea.
Is it the pitcher or is it like the scrubber?
The scrubber? I don't know. I would say I could do either one.
That is such a stupid sport. Like,
now he's going to have the curling community.
I don't
going to be happy
the curling
with us.
Community. Like, that is just a ridiculous sport.
So let me ask you, do you
stop.
Think, because I think
stop.
I think you being an elite athlete that you are, I think if you took
I could curl my ass off.
Exactly. 2 years to hone your craft and just did it every single day, I think you could be an Olympic curler.
Probably.
Look
not.
How many look and I think there are a lot of Olympic sports that you could do that. If you just gave up your life and said, I want to be an Olympian, you could do. Look how many track stars go up and flip over and do the luge or bobsled or all that, and they just go, I'm fast, I'm gonna do it.
Look, like
I could be a driver.
Luge,
I could be a driver of the bobsled.
Skiing, like those ski jumps, even that speed track skate, like all of that seems like that's grueling work, though.
Yeah.
Like to be in shape to do that, it's dangerous coming down those ski slopes.
Dude. Not the driver of the four-man bobsled. Did you see that dude's kind of thick?
Well,
he's a little bit heavy.
Maybe not the driver, but those other dudes are like sprint champions and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
they
can fly.
But like curling specifically,
right.
I'm just going to throw – I'm going to roll this thing down the
and
ice.
And you know,
like,
by the way,
it,
where
and then I'm going to use a little like
– It's a huge like drinking sport too. Like everybody goes out there and gets hammered
well,
while they're curling.
I get down to do that.
All right,
Danny, will you bet on the Winter Olympics at all?
I don't know. If you give me some odds. All right, so what do we have? Favorite to
win
the most golds? That's us,
bit
America.
A trivia. Who would you think is the favorite to win the most golds?
Us?
No. Russia.
No, they're not in it, are they? Isn't Russia boycotting?
A lot of guys are there.
I don't even know. I didn't know there was some talk of that.
Norway.
Oh yeah.
Well,
you would think that
cold
sense.
Weather
that
spot.
Sense,
yeah.
Who do you think the favorite is to win men's hockey?
Finland.
Russia's not in it, right? Didn't Russia boycott? This is how bad our research is for the Winter Olympics. I would say Russia if they weren't it, but clearly they're not. If you've researched this and they're not the favorite,
is Mike Rosioni coaching
our
team?
Is, but the,
Canada.
Yeah.
And the USA doesn't have NHL players this year, which either could be interesting and give us that 1980 feel a little bit, or just a complete.
Who coaches the men's team now?
Who coaches? Are you kidding me?
Who coaches the men's
team?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Who knows? All right. So obviously, we'll be giving you Winter Olympics updates throughout the podcast here for the next
Fantastic.
Couple weeks. But I actually will watch the opening ceremonies as a tradition in
that's
my family.
Tonight?
Yeah. I'll sit down with our family. We'll watch it together because it's patriotic. You get the festivities. I'll watch it with the family. We'll do that. All right. What do you got for topics for us, Debo?
All right, as we mentioned, the Eagles parade yesterday, myself, a lot of people waited a long time to hear speeches like this one. Jason Kelce, Eagles center, dressed in mummer's gear. He absolutely stole the show.
Why was he dressed like that? Was there any story behind the scenes that I don't know
about?
Do you
know much about the mummers? It's
well,
like a Philadelphia tradition,
oh,
New
okay.
Year's Day, so that's
where it's I don't know that.
To them.
I got it.
He continued
oh, did you know
to
that?
Help. I was like, what
come
the
on,
heck
you spent some time in Philly.
But Mummer's not in
it. He didn't even know.
No.
Jason Kelce continued to play up that underdog angle. So the speech was about 4 minutes long. It's good. We're not going to play all of it, but epic.
Two
is
minutes too long, by the way.
Two
it
minutes
was great.
Too long?
Yeah.
Fair. Fair. Right. We're going to play a little bit of it.
But it was
epic
great.
Is a fair word to describe
yes,
our sound of the day.
I'm going to take a second to talk to you about underdogs. Doug Peterson. This past offseason, some clown named Mike Lombardi told him that he was the least qualified head coach in the NFL. Jason Peters was told he was too old, didn't have it anymore. Before he got hurt, he was the best freaking tackle in the NFL. Big B was told he didn't have it. Stephen Wisniewski ain't good enough. Jason Kelce's too small. Lane Johnson can't lay off the juice. Brandon Brooks has anxiety. Didn't go to a Division I school. Nick Foles don't got it. Mark Clement's too slow. LeGarrette Blount ain't got it anymore. Jay and John can't stay healthy. Torrey Smith can't catch. Nelson Aguilar can't catch. Zach Gertz can't block. Brent Celek's too old. Brandon Graham was drafted too high. Benny Curry ain't got it. It's the whole team.
What
right. I got chills.
Debo's ready to go run through a wall. My favorite line in the whole 4 minute speech was Lane Johnson couldn't stay off the juice. Lane Johnson, who was suspended for four games for testing positive, he called him out and basically ran out there and said that. Like, just let it all out.
That was fantastic.
That was epic.
You got to check.
Suspended for 10 games last year.
Yeah, that dude will be a legend in Philadelphia. Like, that guy will never buy another drink. He could just retire now and be set
Shut
for
it
life.
Down.
Replaces any Rocky speech ever said.
That's right.
Well, he was a mummer? Is that what you said
just
it was?
As a mummer. I'll show you after the show.
Yeah, we're going to get some mummer action. Post a picture of a mummer.
Yeah, if anybody out there knows what mummers are, like, I would love to.
Now you're going to have curling and the Philadelphia mummer community.
After me. All right. I got no beef with mummers. No, I just don't know what mummers are.
All right. So a sad state of affairs when you can't even be comfortable practicing with the Patriots potentially around. Eagles long snapper Rick Lovato telling Pro Football Talk that he thinks Philly's Super Bowl walkthrough was completely fake. You have to be nervous with Belichick and company around.
I think it's probably a smart move. I would do it if I was playing, especially if you're doing it in public, anywhere people could see. I'd run all the plays you're not going to run. Maybe throw in some trick plays that you have in your playbook that you know you're not going to call. Give them something to think about.
Yeah, why not? They've got a history.
Yep.
I'm not, especially in a game of that magnitude, dude. Why even mess around with it? Don't give them any opportunity.
You know, we can't avoid football even though the season's over. We heard after the Super Bowl that Gronk would maybe be considering retirement, but in favor of acting. Apparently, The Rock and Sly Stallone urging Gronk to become an actor.
Dude.
Raj, are you taking your kids to Gronk in, like, Tooth Fairy 2?
Yeah, I go check out Gronk. Not in Tooth Fairy 2, but you give me a real, like, action flick.
Come on!
I go watch Gronk. I would.
All right, here's... And
that's surprising.
I go watch Gronk. I mean, I'm still on the F Gronk, but
yeah.
I go watch him in a movie.
I think his only play, if he doesn't play football, is WWE. I think it's wrestling.
Why?
All right. This might sound mean.
Yeah.
I don't think he's that smart.
He can't memorize his script.
But I also don't think he's that. I don't think he's that great. Like, as I don't
personality
like,
wise.
Yes, yeah. I don't, because he doesn't ever like. He tried to do the stand up comedy. It was pretty awful.
Right.
It was trash. Like, it was not funny. It was not that good. You have to have a skill to be an actor, and I think Sly Stallone does have it. I think The Rock, as much as I don't even know if he has haters, but he is a really pretty good actor.
No,
he's turned himself into one. Where he's pretty entertaining. I don't know if Gronk has that.
No, you're right. Because there was a time, I think I told you this. There was in Phoenix, we were hot as a team. They asked me if I wanted to try. And I said yes. And they sent me this script. And I was like, bro, I got this. My wife was like, you're going to be great. I was like, yeah, this is going to be cake. I had to do a read for it. I did not have the chops. Like, I just wasn't.
It's tough.
Like, yeah. It's not an easy thing to do. So you could be right.
We'll have to get into stories about both of us because I read some lines for some shows too. That'll be a separate episode.
I was bad.
All right. Let's do some five-star Q&A. What do we got? We got some good questions this time?
Absolutely. This is not on the list, but your conversation just about practicing to become an athlete in an odd sport came to my mind. Someone sent it to us on Twitter but then deleted it, but I cracked up. They asked, if you gave just a random-ass name, Jericho Cotchery is who they said, 1 year to practice water polo, could he beat a college water polo player? That's what someone asked us, just completely out of the blue.
No.
You don't think?
Nope. Not 1 year. Not for a sport like water polo. No way.
All right. I think I could be a water polo player. All right.
Burning all bridges.
But are you a good swimmer?
Yeah, I'm a good. I was my first sport. Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. I think Rod, that I'll take it off of me. I think you could be an Olympic water polo player if you wanted to. Again, it's another sport where how much competition is out there. And I guarantee you could, like, the guys that can't throw and can't do anything else, go swim or water polo.
Man,
so that's why I think you could do it.
The endurance level in water polo has got to be
ridiculous. Training for a year, give your life to it, you absolutely could do it.
That's Danny, not me. I'm off the no train.
All right, moving on to the questions actually posed to us on Apple Podcasts. Again, if you leave a five-star question or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will answer your question. And if you send us a screenshot, we'll get you a signed Danny Cannell card. This one from our guy Jared Wirtz, who has asked questions before. He wants to know the worst date you all have been on, and T-Bone0121 also asks the same question, kind of for dating advice. No names, but explain why it was so bad. Also, Debo, how do you feel about the Skeller closing? It's a Penn State bar. It's been around for 100 years. My opinion, overrated.
Oh, so you don't care. It's gone.
It's not my scene. Not my scene.
All right, nice.
But worst date you've been on?
I don't know. It's probably in college. I was at Boston University. I didn't have any money. Like, they didn't give us money. They just gave us like a card with like you could use it at the convenience stores and at the cafeteria and stuff like that. So I took a girl. Like, we were from two different, like, she was like a weird kind of alt type of girl, like, but she was hot. And I was like, yo, let's try it. Nothing in common, really. And we went out, and I had no money on the card. So, like,
did you have to ask her to pay?
Oh, dude, did I? It was just awkward from the jump, and it was rough.
See, I would say similar, like, along with similar lines. I never had, like, an epic bad date where something went horrifically wrong or it was awful. But it might be just as painful when you get with a girl that it's hard to talk to and you have nothing in common and there's no conversation and it's awkward. There's nothing worse than that. And then it's the best thing is to kind of bail as early as you can and just like, yeah, this ain't working. Like kind of just get there and just say, hey, all right, let's go. I got some boys.
Too.
Just end it. End it. Just rip the Band-Aid off.
We're out of here.
And everybody will be happier. She might actually like you more as a friend or something and speak nicely of you if you just end it.
Right.
We'll have to check back in with Hannah on that one. Mine was last week.
Oh, yeah.
this one from Typical American Spur, a two-parter. We'll start with Danny. Take a moment and tell us the one thing that hardly anyone knows about your boy, Russillo.
So my old partner on my old radio show, I would say there's not much people don't know, and that's what made him pretty likable on the radio show that we did. Was he was pretty open about it. Like, he didn't do a lot. He sat in his basement to watch NBA games. He wouldn't. When he went out, he would get after it, which everybody knows now that he had his experience, that he would get after it a little bit. But I think what you see on camera and on the show was exactly what you got. There is not a lot of hidden behind him.
Yeah.
I will say this. Like, he came from a background. People know that he's from Cape Cod, and I think they assume one thing, and it's totally not that. Because he came from a family where it was work ethic. He had to work.
Right.
And always had to kind of earn their keep. And I think that's where he gets his work ethic
Cape
from.
Cape Cod, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Raja.
But not the Cape Cod summer home, like $20 million
Not like
home.
Vineyard Vines,
right,
like
right.
with the color popped
no, exactly.
lobsters on your shorts.
Raja, take a moment and tell us one thing hardly anyone knows about your former teammate Steve Nash. Maybe a soccer story. American Spur says he's a soccer guy.
Nah, dog.
You can't go there.
No.
He's not going to sell out his boys. What he's saying, there
you know
is
what?
Something
I'll
there.
Nah, I'll tell you. Steve's my dude, man. We went golfing one year after I was a big golfer, right? But this was my kind of.
You are? Is he?
I am. He was not. Had never played with me, and I was in my infancy as like a golfer, so I wasn't very good. So it was like myself, Boris Diaw, Sean Marks, who's the general manager in Brooklyn now, and Eric Piakowski, and Steve Nash after the season. So we go out, and we're all just chopping it up. Like, Steve's like, I was like, when the last time you played? Probably like 5 years ago. He shot like a, I don't know, like 12, 13 over or something like that. He's just pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Hadn't played in like 5 years. He's a really good soccer player. He's really good at almost like all sports. Like, he's just one of those dudes who either played them all when he was younger or is just that gifted hand-eye-wise. Like, he's a really, really good sportsman.
If he would have committed to soccer, do you think he could have made our USA team? Like
team
how
Canada.
Good?
He's Canadian, but yeah, no, he's really good. Like
do you ever play in a celebrity game?
Yeah, I go up and play in the. At the time, it was called the Showdown in Chinatown when I play in it. And so I was on a team one year with like Thierry Henry, Giuseppe Rossi. Like, it was a gangster game, and Steve is fine in the game. I'm just running around, just catching it and kicking it right back to somebody. But yeah, Steve's a heck of an athlete.
All right, this one from ATD28 Rams. My question is, what advice would you give someone looking to get into the sports reporting or broadcasting field? Also, Danny, can I expect to see you in Tallahassee for the spring game?
Heck yeah, you know why.
Vanilla Ice, Salt and Pepper performing a Doke after
and
the game.
DJ Rob Bass. Don't forget Rob Bass.
What?
In that. Yeah, we need to take the podcast on the road to Tallahassee that weekend.
Rob Bass.
When Vanilla Ice was going off, and this was in your, we were down in Miami when he was legit. I may or may not have put the lines in my inside head.
I went to a Vanilla Ice concert.
Did you really?
MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice. 1991, maybe? Miami Arena, 91, 92,
oh,
something like that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I bet that place was bumping.
It was
I bet it was going
kicks.
Off.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So back to the first question, what advice for sports broadcasting? I think it's really easy. I think take whatever job you can get and get as many reps as you can. Build a resume tape. And don't have an ego. And, like, if you have to go do some local radio, if you have to do some student broadcasting, student channel at your college or high school, do that. Whatever you can do to work on camera. The best thing for that is to get experience, get comfort level working on camera behind a microphone.
Yeah, I got nothing to add to that. I just take every rep you can get.
Yep.
Be versatile.
Yeah.
From Trauma Rama JW, Danny and Raja, how did you meet your wives and Hannah Debo? Have you ever used your sports lore and fame to score yourself a date? Answers?
Debo, you dropping the Canell and Bell podcast at dates at the bars?
Thanks, guys.
I'm sure that'll go a long way.
But how'd you guys meet your wives?
I met my wife. I transferred to FIU from Boston University, and so I met her like the first day I saw her in the parking lot. And I kind of asked, and they're like, oh, yeah, she got a boyfriend. He's like the goalie of soccer team. He's USA. I was like, yeah, don't worry about that. We're straight. So no, he wound up leaving school and like he was a year ahead. So I wound up kind of sliding in there. And the funny thing was a lot of, we started talking one day and she was like, I'm from Long Island. I was like, oh, where'd you go to Walt Whitman High School? Because a lot of the guys on the Boston University team where I was coming from had went to Walt Whitman High School. It was the only school I knew on Long Island. And she was like, yeah, I went to Walt Whitman. What the hell's wrong? Are you reading my bio? Like, are you stalking me? I was like, no, dude, I know John Brennan and Jimmy Schwartz, and they were already friends of hers, so it was small world type of stuff. So,
did you know you were going to marry her from the minute you saw her?
Nah.
Right.
No,
so
I
don't,
mean.
Don't tell her Valentine's Day is right around the story.
No, I
love it. Look,
no, I mean, I wasn't at that point in my life where I was looking to like marry somebody or even think about that at the time. So, but I knew when I saw her, like, that was the first question I asked. Like, who's that?
Right.
And I want to know that. I want to know
Similar story. I was actually later, so it was later in life, but I was working out at LA Fitness.
Right.
And I was going to this kickboxing class. And it was, if you are a single dude, Debo, you need to go to LA Fitness, go to one of the places, go to the kickboxing class. It was about 30 people in the class. Mm-hmm. I was the only dude every time. Like, there might have been one other guy that was there, and he wasn't competition, if you know what I'm saying. So my wife was in the class, and so I'd see her, and I'd kind of give her the look, and you glance at each other, so I wanted to meet her. So I went up, actually. There's a little stretching area under the stairs at LA Fitness, so I started stretching next to her. I was like, what's up? You know, how you doing? What did you think of class and all that stuff? So, again, she had a boyfriend as well. Yeah. Wasn't worried about it. You can't worry about those types of things. But later she told me that she thought two things. One, because I was in the kickboxing class. One, that I was gay.
Yeah.
Or that I was dating the instructor. Because I used to be friendly with the instructors, too, because I was one of the only dudes to go.
Right.
And the instructor wasn't bad looking either. And thankfully, I wasn't with the instructor, because I don't know if I would have met, I would have been with my wife. But my wife gets a little bit mad at me because she says that she knew when she saw me, and I don't reciprocate those feelings.
Right.
But I was attracted to her, and I thought she was hot, but I needed to get to know somebody.
We're wired a little different.
But her, like being that romantic, like deep down inside, she wishes I would have said, she's the one.
I don't think
that
my wife wouldn't say that. Like,
she wouldn't?
No,
good.
I don't think she'd say that.
Good.
That was out in Denver? Or?
No, that was at Fort Lauderdale. That was down here in South Florida at the LA Fitness on Federal Highway.
Oh, that's what's
Yeah. I mean, I know exactly where it was. We drive by, and there's that little moment that, that we have those memories.
Ours was the G parking lot. FIU, baby.
Yeah. So we'll save that question for us. Has Hannah ever used her connection to the Canell and Bell podcast?
I think Hannah uses it all the time.
Yeah, definitely dropping that for sure. We need to get some swag, some gear, so you guys can wear some of that out and see how it does. See how it does out in the scene. Because clearly we're probably big.
Can we ask our listeners where they want to hear this podcast from? Like, are there any major events where they'd like to hear it, right?
Well, that's a good call.
All-Star Weekend, Masters, like maybe NCAA Final Four. Like, if there are places where they'd like to hear us pod from, let us know.
Absolutely. Word. All right. So there you have it. Hit us up at Canell and Bell. Tell us where you would like to see the show from. We may or may not be begging to go on the road, in case you can't tell. But give us some ideas. My personal, it's either Vegas for the Sweet 16 weekend or the Masters for the par 3 tournament. Wednesday there would be phenomenal.
And Tallahassee.
That's done. That's done. You guys are there or not, but I'm going to be there for that concert. All right. Hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. Thanks for checking us out. Make sure you go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, download. If you're not an Apple guy, go to – or girl – check out Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, anywhere you have podcasts, we're out there. Leave us a 5-star review on the Twitter page, at the iTunes page, and make sure you leave us a question in there or a comment. Give us 5 stars. Ask us anything you want. We have some fun with these questions every Friday. And as always, give us any feedback you like at Canell and Bell on Twitter. Thanks for checking us out. Have a good one.